Glastonbury Festival is back. A beacon of British culture. Over 200,000 people flocked to Worthy Farm to revel with some of the biggest names in music. After 2 years away, it was a particularly emotional comeback.
Nice to be a motherfucking Glastonbury, baby!
Glastonbury's history-making moments are legendary. A utopian pop-up city that's about the size of Bath, where you can get completely lost exploring its different provinces that each have their own unique character and community. One of those provinces is the Southeast Corner, a place that comes to life late at night when the headliners are finished and the sun has set. A vast array of late-night entertainment options for revelers. They include the legendary areas Shangri-La, Block 9, Unfairground, and The Common. The Common is one of the most popular late-night areas at Glastonbury, a place that embraces non-materialistic values, transcending the boundaries of spirituality and hedonism. It embodies the spirit of Glastonbury and is home to some visually stunning venues, the Temple, Rum Shack, the Mezcal Yard, and a brand new stage for 2022, Totem. I'm Erica McCoy, and I'm going to take you on a deep dive into the inner workings of this mystical place. This is The Common People.
Yeah, we're in The Common in the Southeast Corner.
Every door you step through reveals more than you could ever imagine.
This is my favourite area.
It's amazing. It's like a combination of everything you really want in a festival.
It feels like you're in a different place to England right now.
The lineup tonight is awesome.
There's a bit of dancing at the temple tonight, which is on fire, quite literally.
We love this field. It's so exciting. I mean, look, this is fire burning.
And Rum Shack, excellent cocktails with rum in them.
The Rum Shack is fun. It's fun, bouncy shoes, which I love.
Rum Shack, there's always rum and bass. Pretty sweet.
Temple's just mental.
I think it's amazing how they built this just for Glastonbury.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Absolutely amazing.
This is where the party, it's where the party begins, really. Yeah.
In short, this is the best area of Glastonbury at this time of the night.
I come to dance it. I like life.
The field is steeped in free party and traveller culture. A free party defies nightclub restrictions and involves turning up with a massive sound system and raving until the organisers are moved on by the authorities. This results in a combination of pounding bass lines and the mysticism of the Glastonbury ley lines. Here is Steve Bedlam, co-director of The Common and free party icon, speaking with Dan Sue, venue manager of The Rum Shack and founder of Lyrics Organics, about the origins of the field.
Well, the first time I went to Glastonbury Festival, I jumped over the fence. I never paid. And I rolled around the festival slightly off my head, listening to music and going, with no tent, no nothing. It was a case of, I want to go to Glastonbury Festival. How do I go there? We get a train there. And then how do I get in? I don't know. There's a fence. Let's climb it. And then the next time I went back to Glastonbury Festival, I was a traveller, which is my third time at Glastonbury, was doing an illegal rave outside the gate where we now run a field, VG3A. So that's kind of like where I started at Glastonbury. And then I started a manufacturing company, sound systems. I'm a big sound system freak, love sound systems since I was a kid. So I started making them and I started hiring them to the festival. And then one day I was called to a meeting, which is a normal thing. We were called to a production meeting. And in this meeting, they said that Michael Evis, who runs the festival, is opening up two new fields. And they said, who wants to run these fields? I was like, what? What do you mean, who wants to run these? Surely it's done in a different way like that, right? Surely they've got an idea of who they want to run it, and they asked them. They're like, no, they've got these two new fields. Who wants to run them? I'm kind of still sitting there thinking, why am I in this meeting? You know, I do sound hire. So I look around the room, and nobody puts their hand up. I'm like, I'll do it. That was it. And that's... So I put my hand up. Next thing you know, I'm in a room with Michael Evis, who is the most amazing and odd bloke in the world. and we're chatting about budgets and how we're going to run this field and what we're going to do in this field. And now I run the field. This is the 10th active year.
And it's called?
It's called the Common. But we were trying to think of names for the field, what we would do. And there's all these fancy names, you know, there's Shangri-La next door, there's all these things. And we're, like I said, we're travellers. All the people who work in the field or run the field, come. We're all travellers. And one of the things that travellers really cherish is common land. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there is thousands and thousands of acres of common land in the UK. And that would be for farmers to graze their sheep on. It would be for travelling circuses to park up on, do their shows. It's a common usage. So we just thought the name Common. I mean, we were like, we can change it later on, is what we said. You know, we'll change it later on. We'll just call it the Common for now, but it fits.
Steve Bedlam and Dan Sue giving a brief but insightful history to the Common. The traveller and free party identity is embedded in the Common. From its name to the makeup of its crew, its deep-lying characteristics that play a crucial role, not only in how the place looks, but in how it operates.
Hello, my name is Aaron Trinder, and this weekend at the Common I've been showing a work-in-progress private screening of my feature documentary, Free Party, A Folk History. So my connection to the Common is that Steve Bedlam, obviously legendary figure within the Free Party community, allowed me, in a way, a certain access to his story. And his story is the sort of one of the key parts of the Free Party community, the Free Party story, with Bedlam Sound System. So 3 years ago, I came and filmed here, but also this part of Glastonbury itself is essential to the Free Party story, because this used to be where the travellers would have their free field. This area, the southeast corner of Glastonbury, is a critical part of the Free Party story, and in some ways the wider rave story, if you like, and festival culture itself. So I spent a long time, I suppose, as a bit of a raver, but I also came from a hippie parent. I suppose you're always looking for that amazing youth movement of your own. And so in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was a bit of a hippie, I had long hair, I kind of was at the perfect time to see those two things combining. You know, the acid house culture was really borrowing from the hippie culture because it had the smiley face. There was people at raves who had long ponytails. It was very much a kind of nod back to the hippie era. But it was this amazing new music coming from Chicago and Detroit that was sounded like from the future. So so in some ways the Free Party part of the rave scene, because I went to lots of paid parties as well and still do in some ways, the Free Party part of it felt like it was in some ways the essence of that hippie ideal, that sort of anarchic ideal, the concept of anarchy as a utopian concept. How do you create a new society? Do you have to do it through laws being kind of effectively enforced on people by violence, which is what the current state we have is in some way, or capital, which is that money dictates everything, or is there a way that people can organize it themselves? And of course it's not perfect, because of course that societal model has never been tested fully and proven, but it's a really fascinating model. And in some ways my connection to it has always been this blend of the acid house story and this other idea, this kind of utopian sense of what society could be like. The traveller community understood the countryside because that's where they lived. The traveller community understood the droves of Hampshire, of Wiltshire, of Somerset, of Devon, because that's where they lived. And they'd also been very used to putting on free events, bring what you expect to find events, which were a utopian concept. They were literally created by people with the idea of, well, let's see what happens when people don't have to adhere by rules and they bring whatever it is they hope to discover in their life. And the interesting thing was when the ravers kind of lost their home, if you like, which was because of the increasing criminalization of acid house parties, and the gangster element moving in because it was a big buck that they could make from selling ecstasy, the travelers were there as this kind of, you know, gatekeeper of knowledge. And the ravers suddenly saw, wow, this is an amazing kind of connection to the thing that we were originally after, a place we can gather. Okay, it was a bit different because, you know, ravers would turn up from the countryside with their trainers and their G-Force jackets, and they would not understand about burying their shit. They wouldn't understand about how to treat the land, and travellers would have to educate them to a certain extent. But likewise, travellers wouldn't quite understand the kind of methods of urban people. You know, they wouldn't quite get the music, actually, a lot of the time. The music was a bit kind of too much for them. They would often be, you know, arguments about, you know, turn the music off. We live here. This is not just a party. We live here. But yeah, to kind of answer your question in a short way as possible, the travellers understood the countryside, and the ravers saw this incredible place that they'd never been to as a sort of a utopian connection to something that they felt like had been taken away from them with the criminalisation of acid house. I think the Common is special and unique because it is, first of all, run by people who have come from the traveller, raver and free party community. So they have a different philosophical outlook to, I'm not going to compare them to other people, but to I suppose, mainstream and commercial ideas. So their heart is in it deeply. You know, Steve and Kerry, you can just tell they do it for the love. And that shows because as an environment it feels like it has a lot of love in it, so that's why I think it is a, you know, particularly kind of magical corner, I suppose, of the festival.
It's a big thing for us, you know, energy, spirit, it's a big thing. I mean, we don't have any particular following or any particular anything. It's just about humans and energy and creativity in one space.
What is clear when hearing from Aaron and Steve, or any other member of the crew, is that the Common isn't just one of 40 fields in Glastonbury. It's a community in transition with an identity and a connection to something bigger. It's a place to platform voices, often unheard in festivals of this magnitude. On the surface, and in its music, it's clear to see the traveller and free party influences throughout. But what the nighttime ravers may not see is how the Common's spiritual connection to the land runs deep. Here's Max Timms, site manager for the Common, speaking to Indigenous artist and wisdom keeper Wit Somit about how the ceremonies and the rituals affect the crew, the ravers, and anyone else passing through the Common.
Michael, who really like treasures the lock gates, they're actually his, he owns them. And like they're his baby. And he comes over and watches us installing them. He comes over and has a drive around whilst we're doing the install of the temple. And he like treats them as his baby. And for some reason the temple's like got a special place in his heart. And Jake's been a big part of making that like journey, and he started off with this sort of like idea of a sort of like, yeah, like a cultural approach, and like sort of based it around spirits and like the gods and the sort of the feeling rather than the spectacle. And he turned it into, you know, one of the best stages I've ever worked on. I've worked on hundreds of stages over the years.
Yeah, that's what he told me. You know, like, he's like, and all sacred space as well.
Yeah.
For the whole area. You know,
yeah.
The whole
and like we way. Say, before we start any build process, we come to the field and each stage location we bless. Mm-hmm. Like we do a ritual. We, you know, thank the past and the future and the, you know, all those that are about to be part of it.
You mean a blessing with a priest?
Yeah, yeah. So like it changes from like who actually does the ceremony each year. It's different in guests that we invite over, but generally we bless the field before we start the process and thank them for what's about to happen, and then do the whole build process, and then at the end of the build we all gather for the open circle where we do another ceremony to thank what's just happened and sort of bless it and prepare it for all of those that are going to come to enjoy it. And it's, I really like, it's not something that ever happens at any other show I've worked on, and I think it's quite an important part of the messaging here.
Yeah.
That, you know, because like many people who come here, they will just see it as a big rave, like, oh my god, like the lights, the music, and they miss the whole
culture.
Well, but that's what we're trying to do. Like we're not, yes, we're about having massive raves and having a good time and big parties. Like, don't get me wrong, we, you know, half the people in this field, that's their background, that's where they're from. But for us, it's very important to concentrate on the fact that, like, this is a journey of opening minds and connecting people.
And this is like a sacred.
Yes, and that, as part of that process, like, to be able to connect people and to be, you know, so open and on level playing field, you have to sort of have that moment where everything is opened onto a level playing field and everyone's on the same approach. And if you're not open-minded and if you don't sort of appease the energy around you, it's quite hard for that to happen. So it just sets a tone for the rest of the show.
And the intentions as well.
Exactly.
Really good.
Yeah.
Really sacred.
Yeah, exactly. And like that's really what we strive for here. Mm-hmm. Is, yes, we have massive raves, but there's the deeper messaging to it as well. That's the main focus for us.
That's what this place is called, the temple.
Yeah, yeah. And like, what is another reason why we're called the Common? And like, a load of people around site call us the Commoners, and like, they say it to offend us, and we love it. It's like, yeah, we are the Commoners. You know, like, we are the common people. Everyone here is the same.
The natives.
Yeah.
The indigenous.
Yeah, and it's like, well, another reason why, you know, we've got that tight family bond. Because we do view everyone as equals. We do view everyone as, you know, we're all, there's not, you know, the chippies aren't booked as chippies, and, you know, my guys aren't booked as site crew. We're booked as, we are here to, as a collective, build this show. So whatever it takes, that's what we do.
As Max mentioned, every year before the gates open, all the crew are invited to an opening ceremony. The sun was beating down and the field was alive with the buzz of people waiting at the barrier of the field. But this ceremony is exclusively for the Common family, a place to create positive energy for the days to come. Here's Kerry, co-director, speaking at the opening ceremony. She spoke quietly and powerfully, and by the end of her speech, you can feel the emotion rolling off the crew.
So it's this vibration of sound, and one of the reasons we're all here, this vibration of music,
celebration.
people coming together. The art's the land, if we could be here. And this is something that happens every year at the Common. I'm joined by Eric Markey, who's going to give us an explanation as to why we did that and why it's important.
Well, essa celebração,
that's a culmination of a prayer, of an intention. Through music, we can connect with each other, connect with the earth, and together heal Mother Earth and heal ourselves.
Tell us a bit about you and your music and how you got into having such a deep connection with the land.
I'm the founder of a media network of indigenous journalists and communicators, and we also have an artist collective where we record traditional sounds and traditional sort of songs and voices from the forest, and we put them together with music.
Por isso eu tenho uma conexão.
I'm a journalist and a storyteller, and I have been able to use that also, and also ancestral songs and ancestral chants have been part of my tradition. They've been passed on to me, so I've been using my combination of journalism and sound art to be recording and foraging for sounds in the rainforest, and also for traditional songs, and to use them to tell stories and to make them relevant to today.
So this is the second time, if I'm correct, this is the second time you've been here. Why is it so important to come back to the Common for you?
So this is, it's really important to come back, and it's really important to reconnect. I came first time more as an indigenous leader, and this my second time I'm coming as an artist and bringing my music and my work, because it's a really important vehicle to share our messages, our stories. And it's very important that reestablishing that connection make us better human beings, and not just for today, but in that way we can create a better future for everyone.
Is there anything here at the Common that you can kind of link back to Brazil? Is there any like community that's like this?
O coração das pessoas.
What's very similar from both places is people's heart. I used to say that we connect to the world through our heart. So I think people here really care about Mother Earth and care about other people and refugee issues and such. And so in that sense, there is a similar resonance. And I think if we cultivate an open heart like that, we can create a better world together.
You're also going to be doing a talk here. Can you tell us a little bit about that talk and what we can expect?
So it's very important that we give a space to indigenous voices, because historically we've been silenced, and around the world colonization has created so much hurt and so much damage. Despite the fact that we are the people who are looking after most of the world remaining biodiversity, around 80%, it's still very ironic that despite all that incredible work that we do to preserve life, we are still marginalized, we are still being silenced. Colonization in Brazil never ended, and therefore it's really important that we can decolonize our hearts, that we can decolonize our mind, so we can change history, we can change the course of history. And I want to show, and in my speech, in my presentation, I'm going to talk about how we can change the world through the power of the music, through the power of our art, through the power of our stories, and also how we can also pressurize our leaders to bring about positive change.
Ready, Natty?
Yeah, you're ready. I think so. I think I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good.
How are you?
Very well, very well. In my happy place.
Where is your happy place? Describe this place.
Well, at the moment we're in the yurt backstage at Glastonbury, but the fact we're at Glastonbury after 3 years is pretty magical, because I genuinely didn't know if it would ever happen again. So yeah, it's very nice to be here.
What does the Common and the Rum Shack mean to you?
The Common and the Rum Shack is one huge family that bolts on for those that are my age, like Voltron, for those who are younger, like Transformers, and for those that are just like to play with things and build things, and those you Lego lovers, because it literally is different people from different communities who have come together over years and years and years and years and years, and now we're all here in one festival. And many of these people run charities, they run other organisations, really cool, incredible projects that help build communities and help people, not just in the UK, but around the world. So being here, it just feels like this almighty force of energy, and we've just all come back together to work out how we're going to dominate the world in the foreseeable future through music and good vibes.
Wicked. Okay, so how does it feel being back? You know, we've all experienced the pandemic. Yeah. It's all been a bit heavy and a bit weird and a bit... What's it like being back?
At the moment, it's like I still don't believe it's happening. I can't believe we're a few hours away from the stage actually opening. And I've got a former student of mine with me as well. So it's her first time at Glastonbury, but also her first time hosting a stage. I'm not sure if she's even hosted a stage anywhere, like this type of thing. But it's good to be back. Reasons being is because I get to see people I haven't seen for years. This field, there's people here that I only see in this field, and I only see yearly. Only here, and then we spend a whole week of our lives together, sometimes a little bit more depending on what work needs to be done, and again that energy and that vibration just comes together, and once it interlinks it just creates these magical spaces, which I think people need, especially after the pandemic.
Yeah. And you mentioned your co-host, because mm-hmm. you're hosting as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love about you and Dan is that you bring people up. It's not just about what you do, it's about supporting other people as well. But do you want to tell us what it's like to host? What's the crowd like in the Common? What are they like? What are they like as people?
We just get the best crowds ever. Like, we literally do. And the amount, I reckon about 30% of our audience accidentally find us and then they're just hooked on us forever. And 70% of our audience are like hardcore followers. But there's so many artists that literally like, dude, I'll come and play again. Like, we could have the same lineup every single year because everyone just comes, plays here, and just like that, I'll just come back and play again. Do you know what I mean? Just let us play. It's fine. I love your venue. And it's a real cool mix of different artists. Like, the one thing that Dan, well, he's good at many things, but the one thing I personally think Dan has excelled at for consistently for 10 years is programming stages where you just think like that and that together, like okay. And other people, I see their faces, they look at the lineup and they're a bit like and in my head, like, maybe my face might say the same thing, but in my heart I just know like that's gonna work, that's just gonna literally happen, and it does every time. Puts mad stuff together. Even this year there's mad stuff together, like the Rum Shack. Like, how crazy is that? Flipping your lineup, so you're going from live music and loud music to then acoustic music because of levels and stuff. It's kind of crazy.
It sounds like you and Dan almost have like a, almost like a DJ or even like a sound system approach to your programming, in the sense that you're kind of putting together people, and you're giving people, you're like almost teaching lessons and sharing info. And it's just like it's a community feel, you know? You're giving a little something and watching how the audience responds, almost like a DJ would.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what the lineups are like, and to reflect that. So one minute these like people will be listening to a drum and bass legend, and the next thing there'll be a folk singer who nobody's ever heard of before. And in many times 50% of the audience will still stay, they don't go off. And in out of that 50%, I would say 10% of them still carry on doing their drum and bass dance through the whole 1 hour set of a folk singer, and they don't stop. Do you know what I mean? It's hilarious. But you just meet all characters. The Rum Shack is purely about characters. You just get every character from every walk of life, and they all seem to find their way here, and you look out in the crowd and you're like, wow, like, yeah, this is a place that I would go and party at, I would hang out at. I think it's a really like not slept on venue. I think actually, like, maybe it's good that not everybody knows about it.
It's our little secret. Exactly. It's our little secret. And I know a big part of the Common is like the spiritual element. How does that link in with you? How do you feel about that aspect of the Common?
So for me personally, this field and what it represents sits perfectly with who I am as a person. But what we try and create as lyrics and all the subgenres that Dan and I have worked on and still continue to work on in our own personal lives, all of these things always have to have an impact of community in it and an impact of energy that will then resonate and create again. And then it will replicate and replicate and replicate. So most of the cases of the 20 years I've been working now, you know, one of my students is Green Tea Peng. She is now playing one of the main stages here this year. So this is her first time playing Glastonbury. And those types of things for me, that's the legacy. That's the first program and project I got funded back in 2006. And with that money, took that young person to their first ever studio. And now in this year, on the 50th anniversary, on the 50th anniversary of Glastonbury, she is on one of the main stages here. Like that's that type of stuff to me, that's the full circle. So the more full circles myself and Dan have, and all of the other good people that do these types of work, including the Roundhouse, who are exceptional at it, as long as we keep making these movements and we can keep building on the next generations and proving to them that these opportunities are real, they're live and they're out there, then I think the world's in good hands. Because without young people, we're doomed. So we need as many of them as possible to be empowered, but more importantly, to feel empowered, not be lectured to or spoken at, if that makes sense.
I think that's a perfect way to end. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Fandabby Dozzy. Now that's very old, isn't it?
Yo, Ron Shack, how you not feeling, people? You feeling nice, yeah? We got a fucking legend in the building, yeah? For those that people out there that know, yeah? This man's been scratching it up for time. People in the cosmos, Ram Shack, go fucking batshit crazy!
Hey yo, make some noise for Natty, ladies and gentlemen, foreign beggars in the motherfucking house. How you feeling?
That was Natty Speaks, the host of The Ram Shack. The Ram Shack has a reputation for platforming the best new music. In the past, they've had acts like Koji Radical, K Tempest, and Green Tea Peng, all of whom have gone on to play the main stage this year. We caught up with some of the young emerging artists who played this year before the gates to the temple and the totem had opened. The Roundhouse also made an appearance.
Hey, what's up? I'm Gnarly. I am a finger drummer from London, but both my parents are Sri Lankan. And I've got my finger in many pies when it comes to music tech. So I do a bit of producing, I do a lot of content creation, a lot of brand work, and then finger drumming, which is like my main passion doing the performance side of things.
Finger drumming, I've never heard of it until I heard someone talk about you, and then I was like, okay, I didn't realise that was a thing. What is finger drumming for anyone that doesn't know?
So finger drumming is basically using like a pad drum machine, so like an MPC or a Native Instruments machine, and playing all your beats live. So it's like being a producer, but then actually playing those beats on the fly. So like you have your sample chops, you have all your drums separate, and everything is played live.
How did you get into it? How did you find your way to the MPC?
I started music when I was like a kid, so I had piano lessons and stuff, and I always knew that I wanted to do music. I just didn't really know what. So I went down the traditional route. Like I studied music at school, did a degree in sound arts and design, and then kind of wasn't really sure exactly what I was going to do. I was always producing on the side and then like working normal jobs and stuff, trying to pay rent and bills. About 6-7 years ago, I saw a video of someone finger drumming and I thought, oh, that's really cool. Like, I'd like to try that. I also wanted to find a way to be a live performer as a producer, not just a bedroom producer. And so that was a kind of, you know, way in for me. And then I tried it and I totally fell in love with it.
How was your first gig at the Common? First Glastonbury gig?
Or first Glastonbury gig,
yeah.
How was it? It was amazing. Like, it was a lot more than I could have ever expected. Like, I thought, oh, it's on a Wednesday, like it's gonna probably be pretty quiet. Like, I've done a lot of those gigs where, you know, you're in a pub in the back room, mm-hmm. and there's maybe like 2 or 3 people and they're kind of just watching because they're like, whoa, what is going on? But you know, the tent was empty when I started, and then it just filled up towards the end, and I was like, really like shocked by it, to be honest. And yeah, super stoked that people enjoyed what I was doing.
What was the story of you getting here? What was the conversation? How did it? Because were you meant to play? Am I right in thinking you were meant to play 2 years ago?
Yeah. So Dan, shout out to Dan from Lyrics Organics, who runs Rum Shack. He's a really good friend actually, and I was supposed to play, I think it was 2020, and obviously the pandemic happened. So I did the live stream that year, you know, I wasn't sure if he was going to invite me this year, and then he did call me up and he was like, hey, I've got a slot for you. And I was so excited. I was just like, you know, like, Glastonbury is probably the biggest festival in the UK, right? Like, it's top on my bucket list of like festivals that I wanted to play. So it's just such a privilege to be here.
My name is India Shan, and we are sat in the middle of the temple, which feels very atmospheric and, yeah, significant. It's a round venue. So, about 36 hours before I was about to leave to Glastonbury, I got a call or got a message from someone asking if I would like to perform at the Common, at the Rum Shack specifically. And I said yes. And I didn't even think I was going to come to Glastonbury about a week before. So it was all very sudden, but really exciting. Yeah, the performance was amazing. It was super fun. Yeah, just real buzzy. It was a nice entry point to a festival this size, I think. Just because the crowd was like it was a good size. It wasn't too intimidating. It was late night, so I feel like people were in good spirits. It was just a nice gig. It was so cool. I think small spaces within festivals are so, so important. I feel like, personally, when I was younger at festivals, like I remember being at Latitude and seeing Mahalia play at a really, really small stage. She was probably about the same age as me, and it's a similar thing as Rum Shack or the stages at the Common in Glastonbury, because they just have, or they provide those opportunities to people who otherwise wouldn't get a platform at a festival like this, or a festival that has that like magnitude, sort of socially, I guess. So yeah, super important. So yeah, coming here from the Roundhouse has been it's been just as sort of magical and dreamlike as I would describe, as much as I could, of my experience working with the Roundhouse. Like, the fact that they've brought me in here essentially is, it just makes so much sense. It's bloody typical in the most sort of like beautiful, ironic way. So yeah, I'm just happy.
The field is blessed, the stage is set, and there's 20,000 people waiting at the barriers. Here's Steve and Dan again to lead us through that moment.
What happens immediately prior to the gates opening in the field? Yeah, just talk us through, firstly, that kind of ritual.
So essentially we blockade the whole field off. Even though we're in the festival, we're a field within the festival, we fence off our whole field so no one can come in there, because we're always running to the wire. That's part of the buzz, if I'm honest. That's part of the excitement of it. And then we line up a badass DJ in the temple, and we open the gates. And literally, when those gates open, you get about 4,000, 5,000 people who have been waiting, rushing in and just filling all the venues straight away. It's an amazing thing to see.
So my name's George, and I'm working at the Field Bar today in the Common, just as a bar staff. This is manic, oh my days. So I've been told there's 25,000 people outside, and every single one of them is sprinting into Temple Bar. This is actually mad. For a while it's been tense, because it's been taking a long time to get to this stage. There's been a lot of preparation to get to this point. And now you can see all the hard work, hopefully, about to pay off, because that is a lot of people looking for a drink.
But for you, like, when those gates
open. How would you describe that feeling?
But it's about the passion and the feeling you get from your party. So I used to do illegal raves in the 90s, and what we used to have the phone line, the infamous phone line. So we wouldn't tell anyone where the party was. We would have a phone line, and they would ring up the phone line at 10 o'clock and we'll go here, you know, and then they would go there and it would be a decoy, because then we'd see if any police are following, and then they'd call us and go, there's nothing here. We go, okay, cool, go here. And then we'd go to the party. So you'd have these convoys of people driving around London, Liverpool, wherever we was at the time. And one of the things that I got out of it, I got a massive rut. I was saying earlier, I stopped taking drugs in 92. And the reason I stopped taking drugs at parties is because I got a massive rush from doing events, from doing parties. I would get such a rush from people turning up at my parties, you know, especially the illegal ones, because we've evaded the police. You know what I mean? We've broken into the venue. We've managed to get the electricity on, got the toilets working, you know, and then open the doors and then there's 1,000 cars driving into a field and you're like, oh, such a rush. And I get the same rush at Glastonbury Festival when we open those gates. I'm like, we've done it. We've done it. Even though it was way more controlled and we had 3 weeks to do it and there's no police chasing us, but we've done it. We got it done, right? You know what I mean? So when those gates open, I try and be in the field. And then I've got the radio here and I'm waiting for all the problems to come up, because I love that aspect of it as well. I love the troubleshooting, the finding solutions to things, you know. But it's a rush. It's a massive physical endorphin rush that I get from it. And that's why I do what I do.
Jungle Cakes in the motherfucking building!
Join us next time on The Common People to hear how Indigenous voices, dark DJs, and feminine energy has been used to transport the common to a new level. Thank you for joining us on this journey through The Common. We hope it has given you a glimpse into this incredible community of commoners. Thank you to Kerry Veitch, Dan Sue and Steve Bedlam for giving us access to this glorious field, and to all the crew, artists and speakers who took time out of their festival to speak to us. I've been Erica McCoy. The Common People was produced and edited by the brilliant Marnie Woodmead, with support from Tom Bett and Carrie Stewart. For more information on The Common, you can follow them on their socials at Glastow The Common, and keep up with all things Transmission Roundhouse by following us at Transmission_RH.